at rwjf.org.
Good morning. Welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program with Eve Prang Plews. Eve is in Sarasota today, where she's celebrating her husband's birthday. And I don't know if she's celebrating what happened on the Super Bowl yesterday. Hey, Eve, how are you?
Thank you.
So, did you like the way the Super Bowl turned out last night?
I watched the last 1 minute.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, you know what happened.
Yeah, I know what happened at 2 minutes when Brady got nailed, and that was all she wrote.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about Tom Brady. It is pretty amazing that an athlete of his age continues to compete and hung in there the whole game. And I want to ask you about his diet. We might have talked about this before, but let me just read from an article that I've got on Tom Brady's diet. It's all about his book, the TB12 Method. And it's a water-based, he says he's very water-based. He drinks 12 to 25 glasses of water a day, most of them mixed with his own self-branded TB12 electrolyte concentrate. He has a self-imposed rule that he won't drink water more than a half an hour before a meal, although he also loads up on protein shakes and smoothies, so it's unclear how much of his diet is liquid. And Brady's diet is also caffeine-free, gluten-free, dairy-free, fungus-free, sugar-free, and GMO-free. And it's all about anti-inflammatories and alkalizing his body. At his level of athletic elitism, one's body is truly a multi-million dollar entity, this article says. Aside from bananas, grapes, and blueberries, Brady doesn't eat much fruit. And when he does, he doesn't mix it with other foods. He says, eat fruits alone. They digest quickly. Other foods don't. One other thing about his diet is that one limitation of Brady's plant-based lifestyle is that he does not consume nightshades, which include tomatoes, potatoes, eggplants, bell peppers, and chili peppers, all thought, though not proven, to be a cause of inflammation. And so anyway, that kind of sums it up. I mean, Brady is an amazing athlete. He lost last night, but it was a great, great game. So what's your take on Brady's diet?
Well, my understanding is that it's something his wife designed. And so, you know, while he's compliant with her requests, as all good husbands should be, some of these things I challenge. I think there's a lot of pop nutrition in these statements. Let's start at the end and go backward. First off, about nightshades. The Solanaceae family, or the nightshade family, that contains white potatoes, but not sweet potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, and even though we don't eat it, tobacco. That's all part of that Solanaceae family. And what's true is that in that collection of foods, we have foods that virtually 85% of the world's population use, if not on a daily basis, on a repetitive basis. The nature of those, the popularity just of tomatoes and potatoes and peppers, not so much eggplants, is huge worldwide. And so when we look at entire populations like the Peruvians that virtually developed all the, you know, hundreds of different species of white potatoes that we have, a diet like the Irish in the 1800s was virtually all of their diet, then we would expect epidemiologically that if we went to that population, we would find that they all had arthritis, that they were all inflamed. That's not the case. So, yes, there are people who are sensitive to that family, but, you know, this was a piece of pop that came about as a result of a radio broadcast that was done way back in the 50s, and it's become an urban myth. And yet, I frankly do not see that everybody in the population are sensitive to nightshades. If you want to give them up, there's no harm done. But the other side of it is, you know, potatoes are really good sources of potassium and vitamin C. Tomatoes are really excellent sources of vitamin C and lycopene. We know that men that eat multiple servings of cooked tomatoes every week have a much lower rate of prostate cancer, perhaps because of the lycopene and the vitamin C together, perhaps because of another constituent we haven't even identified. So I can't demonize that category of food. When I hear about him eating fruit alone, and otherwise my saying is eat it alone or leave it alone, I'm in 100% agreement with that statement. I am not in 100% agreement with limiting it to bananas, grapes, and blueberries.
Now one thing, just going back to the nightshades, one thing that Brady claims is that the nightshades cause bloating, that they give him, you know, they add pounds, and that's why he avoids them. Any truth to that?
Well, you know, bloating and pounds are two different critters. Adding pounds means you're taking in more calories than you're putting out. Bloating could just mean you have a belly full of gas.
Okay.
So, you know, those two things don't necessarily correlate. But when we talk about eat it alone or leave it alone, the reason that I recommend people eat fruit as the first food of the day and pretty much stay away from it the rest of the day unless it's a late afternoon snack is because he's exactly right. Fruit doesn't require much in the way of digestion in the stomach. The stomach doesn't really digest fruit or bread or an ear of corn. What the stomach works on are proteins. So whether it's an egg or whether it's a pork chop or whether it's a piece of salmon, that's what your stomach works on are the proteins. The nature of fruits is they only hang out in the stomach for about 20 to 30 minutes, depending on their temperature when you put them in, meaning that an apple out of the refrigerator will take longer to digest than the apple that's been on the counter because it's colder. And your stomach is an oven, and it's designed to bring those fruits up to a 98.6 degree or thereabout temperature, and then the stomach releases them and they go into the small bowel. When you have your bacon and eggs and toast for breakfast and then you turn around and eat a piece of cantaloupe afterward or whatever, then that fruit is all mishmollied in with the rest of the food and gets trapped in the stomach. Eggs and bacon are going to hang out in your stomach for at least 4 hours. So what happens is the fruit then ripens, gets up to that 98 degrees, and then it starts to ferment, and there's your gas. So fruit, eat it alone or leave it alone, I think is a really good rule. Now, if somebody that's listening has been cutting a banana onto their Cheerios for the last 40 years and it doesn't bother them, well, keep doing it. Mm. You know, putting a few blueberries or strawberries on a salad doesn't really matter much because they're very low in sugar. But when you get to foods that are very high in sugar, like grape is, you know, one of the few fruits that actually has glucose in it, direct glucose, then, you know, the thing that I missed the most out of all of these statements about his diet was the word organic, that he's eating organic the majority of time, because grapes are a very highly sprayed food.
Mm. You know, go ahead.
I just make one more comment about the fruit. He's limiting himself in terms of the fact that the phytonutrients, the plant nutrients that are in fruits, all of the different colors of fruit have all the different colors of vegetables as well, have different nutrient compositions. And so when you limit yourself to just these three fruits, you're not getting all of these phytonutrients that would come if you varied your diet over the season. So that in the winter when the citrus is here, we eat a bunch of citrus. And in the fall when it's apples and pears and grapes, we eat more apples and pears and grapes, following Mother Nature's season.
He says that he drinks 12 to 25 glasses of water a day, and he avoids drinking water just before meals. I assume that's to aid digestion. What's your take on that? Does it help to aid digestion to avoid drinking water during a meal?
Well, there's two considerations there. First off, some people believe that if they drink a glass of water before they eat, they're going to, quote, dilute their digestive juices. But the pH of stomach acid is about 2. It's incredibly acidic on that scale from 0 to 14. And so just putting in a glass of water is hardly going to dilute that, even if the water has a pH of 7. You know, a new study that was just done on weight loss, a very interesting study, showed that if people drank 16 ounces of water within a half an hour of when they eat, they lost 3 pounds over 12 weeks without even dieting, because they had a sense of fullness. So if people had low volume of stomach acid, then sure, don't drink within a half an hour of eating. But chemically, the idea that that water would dilute the stomach acid enough to impede digestion is really nonsense. As far as the 12 to 25 glasses, we want to remember the formula for water. And the formula for water is take your body weight, divide it in half, and express that number in ounces. So if you weigh 150 pounds, you need 75 ounces of water a day. Now, that's not coffee, tea, beer, wine, juice, pop, soup. That's water. Well, you're going to add another glass to that for every half hour of sweaty exercise that you do. So if you're somebody that's teaching aerobics classes or you're working out on a field, then you're going to increase the total amount. But if I'm talking about 25 glasses, meaning 8-ounce glasses, 400 ounces of water, that would be appropriate for an 800-pound person. And what's true is that you could actually damage the kidneys by putting that much water through it, whether you add electrolytes to it or not. I don't know the formula for his electrolyte combination, so I can't comment on that.
All right, so I was under the impression, too, that he and his wife have the same diet. She was shown last night drinking a glass of red wine, what appeared to be a glass of red wine, but at least in some of the articles I've read, it says that he doesn't consume alcohol.
Maybe she does and he doesn't.
Yeah, it could be. He's also he's caffeine-free, gluten-free, dairy-free, fungus-free, sugar-free, and GMO-free. A lot of those sound reasonable, but what's your take on caffeine-free and fungus-free and dairy-free?
I have no argument with that. You could be perfectly healthy avoiding all of those foods. You know, caffeine for some individuals, and we have evidence to demonstrate, increases circulation in the brain. And so that's a beneficial thing, to carry more stimulation to the brain. But for somebody who has a liver gene that doesn't metabolize caffeine well, they already know who they are. They're the people who drink a cup of coffee at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they can't go to sleep at 10 o'clock at night because they can't metabolize the caffeine. They already know who they are and should avoid caffeine at all costs. As far as fungus is concerned, it doesn't matter whether it's mushrooms, which are clearly a fungus, or that family of molds and yeast. I don't know whether he's inclusive in that, whether he's avoiding all molds like you'd find in blue cheese, or yeast like you'd find in bread or soy sauce, as well as funguses like mushrooms. But once again, you know, we have thousands and thousands of years of using mushrooms both dietarily and medicinally to good effect. As far as avoiding all GMO foods, boy, I am in his camp. Genetically modified foods are everywhere. The high fructose corn syrup that's in your soda pop and in your ketchup. You know, it doesn't matter whether we're getting soy oil in the salad dressing or canola oil that is being used for cooking. All of these things are genetically modified. We don't know that they're not safe. We just don't know that they're safe. And those are two different things, because genetically modified foods always have residues of glyphosate or Roundup on it. And in my opinion, that's one of the absolutely biggest health challenges we're going to see over the next century, because we've damn near saturated this planet with glyphosate, not just as an ingredient of Roundup, because they've lost the patent on that. It's in 600 different products now. As far as eliminating sugar is concerned, sugar does not occur in nature as sugar. We process food to get the sugar out of it. But, you know, if he's eating bananas and grapes, he's getting sugar from that. You know, we're getting sugar when we eat a bowl of lettuce. So he's talking about added sugar. And again, I have no argument. As far as dairy products are concerned, you know, humans are the only people that consume milk or products made from milk after weaning. Every other mammal on the planet, the second that they've finished nursing, it doesn't matter whether it's an elephant or a whale. The situation is they never drink milk again for the rest of their life. So there may be something to be said for going on a dairy-free diet. I have clients that are incredibly dairy sensitive. Even a half an ounce, you know, those little half and half containers you get for your coffee when you're out, even that will set off their reactions. One of my clients who has rheumatoid arthritis, if she gets even a half an ounce of dairy products, she can't close her hands the next day. So there are individuals that are highly sensitive to dairy. And so whether it gives them a constant throat clearing and a lot of mucus production, or it gives them inflammation in the joints. So I don't have any arguments with any of those things.
Well, Eve Prang-Plues is here. We're talking about Tom Brady's diet for a few minutes of the day after the Super Bowl. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address, if you want to send your question in via email, send it to dj@wmnf.org. We have about 10 questions pending in the queue. Just a reminder, too, that if you're down here on vacation, if you're in Florida on vacation, you can take WMNF back with you. We've got four great channels. Just to look for us at WMNF.org. So, Eve, a bunch of questions have come in via email already, and I wonder if I could start asking you some of these questions.
I'd make one closing comment on Tom Brady's diet. I think that he's putting out good education to the public, which is the fact that you can live without some of these things. You know, a lot of people go, oh, don't take away my wine. Oh, don't take away my chocolate. You know, don't take away this. He has demonstrated that you can be a grown-up and you can actually make decisions about health that are beneficial. And so I think that's an important message to send to people, because there are individuals, I certainly see them in my practice on a very regular basis, that eliminating certain foods would eliminate a lot of their primary complaints.
Now, Allegra from Fort Worth writes, the Chinese market, Oceanic in Tampa, has a plethora of treasures, including glass bottles of royal jelly and liquid ginseng. Are these effective to use? Also, my work has an RO system. My boss said I can add regular Epsom salts to fortify it with all the essential minerals. Do you recommend Epsom salts being added to your reverse osmosis water?
Well, Epsom salts are only going to add magnesium. They're not going to add all of the minerals that we need. So, you know, and if you get enough Epsom salts, you won't be leaving the bathroom anyway, so it won't be a problem. As far as the royal jelly, there's some studies on royal jelly, which is a byproduct of the manufacturing of honey by the bees. And, you know, there are lots of claims that are made about it. But again, where are you going to get a study? Who's going to fund it? So, you know, sometimes these claims are a little over the top. And I've heard the claims on everything from aloe to garlic to goji berries, you know, to the magic ingredient that nobody ever found until your grandmother talked about it. And so, you know, I'm not sure that all of these things are up to the claims that are made about them. As far as liquid ginseng is concerned, I frankly don't know why you'd bother. Ginseng, unless you're making it into a tincture, that's a different story than just liquefying ginseng. Ginseng is a root, and roots are very stable. They'll keep sometimes for years and years and years. And so if you were to pulverize that dry root and soak it in a mixture of water and alcohol in a certain ratio for every plant and make a ginseng tincture, then the next question you have to ask is it Korean ginseng or is it American ginseng? Is it Panax or is it Eleutherococcus? They're two different families of plants. So I don't really know what liquid ginseng means for sure, so I can't comment on that.
Let's go to the phones, and Becky in Lakeland has been holding for a while. Hi, Becky. Welcome to the program. You're on with Eve Prang-Plues, and we're talking about health and nutrition here on 88.5 FM.
Hey, Rob and Eve. I love the show. And
thanks,
can't wait
Becky.
To see what the rest of it is going to be today. But I'm commenting on something that you said 2 weeks ago. Towards the end of the show, someone called in about his nephew or son or something. The person had multiple health problems, but one of them was asthma, in which he got a lot of thrush in his mouth. And you said something that coincided with my experience. I'm also an asthma sufferer, and I take a preventive inhaler. You said that a lot of times that will cause thrush. Well, I got thrush a number of times, and I complained to my dad, who was an old-school Rexall pharmacist way back in the day when pharmacists knew a lot more than maybe they mainstream pharmacists know now. But anyway, he told me, Becky, every time you use the inhaler like Dulera and some of those other ones that are preventive, rinse your mouth out. Immediately following, so all that powder residue and so forth that sticks in your throat gets rinsed away. And I began doing that with whatever mouthwash I was using, like Listerine or whatever. And that keeps me from getting the thrush effect, you know, from using that.
What a great tip. What a great tip. Thanks for that, Becky's dad.
But secondly, when I would get thrush, like if I forgot to rinse or something like that, he said the cure is to gargle with hydrogen peroxide 1% or whatever the percent is for what you buy in the drugstore. You won't do that all the time because it's hard on your teeth, I know, but that fixes it. You know, like it tastes like crap, but if you gargle with that, spit that out, it fizzes and buzzes and stuff like that and kills the yeast that has begun forming in the back of your throat. Fixes that thrush problem in a New York minute. And so I just wanted to let you know that that is something that works for me. And I hope that that's sound advice.
Okay.
Well, I think the rinsing your mouth out is sound advice. I'm not certain that I would endorse the idea of rinsing your mouth with H2O once or H2O2, hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah.
Twice a day, 365 days a year.
Oh, no, that's only if I get the thrush.
Okay. For the listeners that aren't aware, thrush is an overgrowth of yeast, often Candida albicans, and that yeast is a natural and normal part of the digestive system. We have to remember the digestive system begins at the lips.
Yeah.
And the nature of those asthma inhalers often kill back some of the bacteria that keep the yeast in check. The problem that happens with that advice, Becky, is that very often the thrush is not just in the mouth and the throat. It is actually in the esophagus. And so no matter how many times you rinsed with hydrogen peroxide, you wouldn't be addressing an overgrowth that happened in the esophagus.
Understood.
So I think that you've done well to follow Dad's advice in this situation and have had good results. And I will embrace your advice about rinsing out every time you use the inhaler and see if I can pass that on to clients of mine.
All right.
Thanks for that.
Becky, thanks a lot.
Enjoy your show. Looking forward to the rest of it. Thanks.
Thanks, Becky. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Susan's in Auburndale. And she writes, "Hi, Eve. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the good and bad of taking statins for high cholesterol. My mom has a high LDL number. It's 199. She's 82 years old with controlled high blood pressure and diabetes. She's been controlled for several years with decent cognitive abilities." And so there you go. Question about statins.
Statin drugs are the good, the bad, and the ugly. For some people, they're absolutely imperative, and if I had an 80-plus-year-old client who had an LDL of 199, I'd recommend a statin to them. There are definitely downsides of statins. The downsides, and we've probably all heard this story, is that for some people, rhabdomyolysis, a breakdown of muscle tissue happens, which can ultimately cause kidney failure. These are individuals that ache. They just, their muscles just ache when they take a statin. We also know that there are instances of transient global amnesia where people completely lose time and, you know, put themselves back when they were 17 or 25 years old. I've told the story of Dr. Dwayne Graveline on the show a couple of times, a former astronaut who had that experience on the drug Lipitor. But this is not a hard line. I am not anti-pharmaceuticals by any means. Pharmaceutical drugs have saved my life. But I am anti the use of pharmaceutical drugs when there are other options. But absolutely, I believe that there is a cardiac risk factor that identifies people that statin drugs are very beneficial. The one thing that I will hold out in Susan's comment is decent cognitive function. I'm not sure what decent cognitive function means. So I wouldn't blame the statin necessarily, but the combination of diabetes and hypertension, even controlled, together with these high LDLs, is not really a good formula combination for keeping the brain as sharp as we would like to have it.
Let's go to Joan, who's in Newport Richey. Hi, Joan. You're on with Eve Prang-Plues, and we're talking about nutrition. What's your question?
Hi, Eve. Hi, Rob.
Hi.
Hi, Joan.
I would like to ask about filtering water, and me and my husband were wanting to put a filter system on our drinking water, on our kitchen faucet. And what do you have as far as any recommendations?
My recommendations have always been a compressed carbon filter that is listed as absolute 1 micron. The word absolute means that what goes through that filter is not any larger than a half a micron. So it's compressed carbon. The good ones are in stainless steel houses. They can either be plumbed under the sink permanently, like I have it in my home, or sit on a countertop like I have it at my clinic, or that people could do if they were renting, you know, and they don't want to plumb it in. And then the number of times that you would change that cartridge would depend on how many people that are in the household. So with just my husband and I, we would change the cartridge once a year. A client that I have that has 6 kids, he needs to change that cartridge once a quarter.
So what about what about the filters that are attached to the faucet itself?
I think those are bacteria hotels. The thing is, they're too small of a surface area. The same thing is true with all those pitchers you pour water out of.
Yeah.
The filter itself is the size of a charcoal briquette. There's just not enough surface area to collect the gasoline, fuel oil, pesticides, herbicides, pharmaceuticals, et cetera, that are present in our public water supply today. So, yes, are they better than nothing? They grab a few large molecules. Again, depends on how often you change the filter. But as far as I'm concerned, the gizmo that screws on the faucet, the pitchers, you may as well set fire to a $20 bill. You'll have more fun.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Joan, thanks
a lot. You're more than welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bacteria hotels. How about that? This is WMNF in Tampa. Ronnie writes, I have recurring eye styes. I have the recurring styes in both eyes. I've had the problem for about 4 to 5 years. I've been to a doctor 3 different times and once to an eye specialist over that 4 to 5 year period, but I still have the problem. There's pain and inflammation when the styes occur. So Ronnie wants to know if there's a natural solution.
Well, first off, Chinese medicine says eyes and liver are brother and sister. And what that means in the Chinese parlance is the fact that if there's something going on with the liver, I'm not talking about a pathology or a disease of the liver, just simply that the liver may be inefficient at processing toxins, that can often show up in the eyeballs. But styes are bacterial in nature, and they're bacteria that happen down in the roots of the eyelashes themselves oftentimes. So washing the eyes gently with a very mild, it was often recommended to use a baby shampoo. To do that on a daily basis, there are now wipes that come in, you know how when you go to the restaurant and they give you a wipe for your hands?
Yep.
There are special wipes for the eyelids that can reduce that bacteria that's down there in the eyelids. There is a homeopathic remedy that is very effective in trying to get the stye to release the material inside, but this homeopathic remedy can only be used if somebody does not have in their body any artificial parts. If you have a tooth implant or a pacemaker, or you got a screw in your ankle when you broke it, or you got clips in your gallbladder when you had a surgery, then you absolutely cannot use this homeopathic remedy, which is called cilicia. Cilicia, or cilicia with an S, is something that pushes out foreign material. And so obviously, if you have foreign material in your body, you don't want to push that out. But if somebody has a stye, cilicia is the first thing I grab.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and thanks to Frank Knox, he's our phone producer today. This is 88.5 FM, and we're going to go to Mike in Tampa. Hi, Mike, you're on with Eve. What's your question? Hi, Mike.
Hi.
You're on with
Hello?
Eve.
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was wondering, I just had a double bypass 2 weeks ago. I'm doing fine, but what kind of foods are bad for the recuperation? Specifically, are eggs bad, 2 or 3 beers a week, bread, black coffee?
The situation in terms of the bypass surgery is to realize that you have accumulation of plaque inside your arteries. And so what we want to do is to keep the inflammation down in your body, and it doesn't matter where the inflammation is. Whether the inflammation is in your lung, is asthma, like we talked earlier to Becky, whether your inflammation is in your joint, like arthritis, whether it's in your skin as eczema or psoriasis, you want to reduce inflammation across the board. And so uses of the concentrate of the spice turmeric are one of the things that can be used to reduce inflammation. But inflammatory foods will start with the four-legged animals, beef, pork, lamb, buffalo. A significant reduction in the use of the four-legged animals, never more than two servings a week. More use of the birds, the chickens, the turkeys, the ducks, and the fishes, not shellfish, but fishes themselves are beneficial in this instance. And the more vegetables you can get into you, the better. I mean, if there's one statement that we can make across the board, the more plants you eat, the longer you live.
Okay, Mike, there you go.
So are eggs bad or...
Eggs aren't bad. You know, the foods that are bad are the highly processed foods. You know, the myth about the fact that eggs have too much cholesterol is just nonsense. Your liver makes cholesterol according to how much is in your bloodstream. So if you are a vegan and you don't eat any animal foods whatsoever, you never get any cholesterol in your diet whatsoever, your liver makes a lot of cholesterol because you have to have it to make your hormones, to make your neurotransmitters. But if you went on a paleo diet and you're eating a ton of meat, then you're going to have a lot of cholesterol in your bloodstream, in which case your liver isn't going to make as much. So your liver compensates for that. So the idea that eggs are the evil enemy is nonsense. Eggs contain one of the most important fats called phosphatidylcholine in the yolk. All these years we've been throwing away the yolk and eating the white. We should have been throwing away the white and eating the yolk because that phosphatidylcholine is so good for your nerves and your brain.
All right. Mike, there you go.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. I hope your recovery goes well.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Now, here's an email from Jay. He says, is it okay to take hyaluronic acid long-term? Also, is it safe to consume dried seaweed? I eat a brand of dried seaweed that's from South Korea, and I'm worried about the contaminants that may be in it, writes Jay.
Well, first off, in terms of hyaluronic acid, I know of no bad news with hyaluronic acid. This is a supplement that helps your body make synovial fluid, make the lubricant that is in your joints. And so I have had clients on hyaluronic acid for 12 and 15 years to help the mobility of their joints in cases of either trauma or arthritis, and have had very good luck doing it. And I really don't know of any bad news about it. As far as the dried seaweed concerned, you're very right to be concerned. The China Sea is one of the most contaminated ocean bodies that we have in the world. And so, you know, taking that dried seaweed, and I don't know whether you're using nori, which is common, or wakame, or arami, or kombu, any of these seaweeds. But, you know, the thing that we have to pay attention to with all of the seaweeds is also that they're high in vitamin K. And so, you know, there's a certain amount of all of these fat-soluble vitamins that we need. You know, America is commonly deficient in three of the fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin E. But people can get too much vitamin K, and this is K1, and it has to do with a clotting factor. So in terms of toxicity, I think your cautious approach is really smart. I would be a lot more likely to use the dried seaweed that comes to us from France, from Nova Scotia, from Iceland, from the Scandinavian countries, where we've got a cleaner ocean.
Well, this is the Health and Nutrition Program. Eve Prang Plues is here. She's here with us every other Monday. Next Monday will be something special. She'll be here with us, maybe taking a few questions as she co-hosts the show with John Butts of the Sustainable Living Program. Dennis writes this, if you keep your wife happy, you will have a fulfilling life. Coming about something said at the top of the show. That's Dennis from Sarasota. I think his is his birthday today, too.
Yes, thank you, husband. Happy birthday.
Travis writes this, what advantage would a healthy 65-year-old man get from taking 1 to 3 milligrams of natural chelated boron capsules each day?
Boron?
Boron. Yeah, I'm sorry. Boron.
Well, generally speaking, I don't give people boron unless I know they need it. We use boron sometimes in osteoporosis as part of a, you know, a cocktail of various other nutrients like vitamin D and calcium and magnesium and silicone, and, you know, we put together a soup of nutrients. But to use boron on its own without knowing anything about the supplemental regimen, it wouldn't be something I'd endorse.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and Ron's in Lakeland. Ron, you're on the air with Eve. What's your question?
Well, I'm with the birthday boy, Dennis, out of Sarasota. I have been relishing in a 26-year marriage that I hope goes another 70 or 80. And if you do what your wife requests, your life will be very happy. So your reaction to that earlier, Rob, set me back. But please, gentlemen, hear me. At 26 years, it's really, really easy. Just do what your wife says. Thanks, great show. We always love listening to you.
Thank you.
Right,
thank you, Dr. Ron.
Thanks, Ron. All right. I guess he must know. And here's an email from the 727 area code. What oil can Eve recommend for joint pain? Drinkable oil can she recommend?
None.
But you going back to hyaluronic acid, would this help joint pain?
You don't lubricate the joints with WD-40. I mean, you don't use bearing. You don't use bearing grease on your elbows. You know, this isn't the way that this works. I mean, fish oils can reduce inflammation across the board, and therefore will reduce inflammation in the joints. But you know, I'm starting to see so many people that have created problems with drinking coconut oil. You know, people got cuckoo for coconut, and you know, they were told, oh, drink a tablespoon of it every meal, and it's going to, you know, turn you into an 8-year-old. You know, it's going to solve all, it's going to get rid of Alzheimer's. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. And now I'm finding people, you know, their gallbladders are about ready to go in the garbage can because they've been sucking down too much coconut oil. They've got so much saturated fat in their system at this point, they've put themselves at risk of heart disease. And so the idea that you're going to drink oil to make your joints better, honey, no. That is not what's
going to
happen.
Okay. Let's go to Sean in Tampa, who's been holding for a while. Hi, Sean. You're on with Eve Prang Plews, and we're talking about nutrition.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
First of all, I just want to say I listen to your show often, and just the breadth of information is just wonderful. So thank you. My mother is a pancreatic cancer survivor. She had surgery and went through chemo, and she's currently in remission. But she complains about the thrush a lot in her mouth, and I'm wondering if that had anything to do with it. Possibly.
Well, the thing is that she's been given a ton of antibiotics, both for the surgery and afterwards. And the antibiotics kill back the good guy bacteria, and they let the thrush and the yeast take over. And in that particular instance, it's likely that she has an overgrowth of yeast in her digestive system, not just in her mouth or throat. And so the prescription...
Even,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Even after... it's been a couple of years.
Oh, I get people in my practice that have had yeast overgrowth for years.
Really?
Whatever the condition.
She complains about it regularly.
Well, the majority of these people, no insult to mama... But the majority of these people are gassy. They're gassy and they're bloaty. And so it is. All of us have gas. It's a natural and normal part of digestion. But there's a difference between having a little bit of gas and being a musical instrument. You know, one of the funniest clients that I ever worked on in all the years that I've been practicing here in Sarasota was a mother of a client. And he drug her to my clinic, literally. She did not want to be there. And he said he has to treat her because her gas was so bad that they couldn't go anywhere publicly without him being embarrassed. And the mother was blasé to it. And she came into my clinic, and my first question is, what problem are we here to solve? And she said, I can blow out a candle at 100 yards. And once you figure out what that means, you'll laugh too. So the situation is, if she's got thrush and she's gassy, then she's got an overgrowth of yeast through the whole digestive system. Doctors would use a drug like nystatin in order to treat this.
Is there a homeopathic remedy?
No, it's more complicated than that once this has been longstanding. You've got to use a good bit of probiotics, especially Saccharomyces boulardii. Saccharomyces boulardii is a yeast. SacB is how it's often called. It is a yeast, and it sounds funny to use a yeast to try to chase out another yeast. It doesn't kill the yeast, it crowds it out. But there are various remedies that we use to get rid of yeast, from pharmaceutical medications to various botanical herbs. Which one we use is determined by testing at a specialty laboratory, a laboratory that does digestive disorder testing, and they actually will test the botanical compound, like berberine or oregano oil, et cetera, against the yeast to see which one is the most effective. But using things like SacB and using good guy probiotics like Lactobacillus acidophilus and Bifidobacterium, those things can help reduce the volume of yeast, but not necessarily eliminate it. And remember, when I blast out these Latin names and you didn't catch it or write it down, we have archives here at the station. And so you can always go back and listen to an old show. You can also listen to it on the NPR app, and then you could capture that information.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Okay, Sean.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Sean, thank you. Thank you. And that's the good news about your mom surviving pancreatic cancer. Let's go to Samantha in Sarasota. Hi, Samantha. You're on with Eve. What's your question?
I came in at the point when she was discussing the LDL cholesterol and the statins.
Right.
Back before Obamacare, when I had no insurance and really couldn't afford to go to a doctor most of the time, to make a long story short, you know, my cholesterol was a bit high at about 242 or something, and he wanted me to immediately get on something, but he knew that I, you know, couldn't necessarily afford that, as underemployed as I was at the time. And he recommended slow niacin, you know, building up over a few weeks from 500 to 1,500 or even 2,000 milligrams, and he warned me, you know, that some people have that muscular reaction she talked about, and to be on the lookout for it and report it if it happened, but that he thought it was less likely to cause it than statins and didn't have any of their other ill side effects or potential harmful things. And I brought my cholesterol down to something like 180-something, and it worked just fine. It, you know, in 3 months, it brought it down that low.
I mean, well, that's a great tip, Samantha. What's true about niacin is some people can't tolerate niacin because of the flushing effect that happens.
That's it. Yeah, that's why he said slow niacin. But I'll be honest, I still sometimes at least once a day put up with a nice 20 minutes worth of flushing and itching. But it was,
well, and again, some people don't tolerate that very well, especially people that are already red-faced, you know, that have a lot of broken capillaries.
That's me, I have rosacea.
Or they have a lot of broken capillaries in their skin. Also, niacin for some people is a little hard on their liver. So I do agree that that is an interventional therapy and certainly much less expensive than many of the statin drugs. But a couple of things. First off, a number of statin drugs have come off patent, and so they're now available in a generic form at a much lower price. And secondly, just the reminder that niacin isn't right for everybody. So when people start taking niacin...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but at the time, one of the things that also was the reason I never wanted to be on them, a friend who was a registered nurse who was retired said her son-in-law died of statin-related liver problems and basically died vomiting up blood. That really gave me the creeps.
Well, you know, there are stories about all sorts of things that don't necessarily relate to the general public. They are onesies. And so, you know,
like,
I'm sorry for
rare.
Your friend's loss, but the situation is we, you know, that kind of reporting in terms of statin drugs is very, very rare. And I emphasize very, all capital letters underlined, very rare. So the circumstances are still the same. Niacin is a good working tool, and it's not for everybody.
All right, Samantha, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
Thanks. And here's a question from Anonymous. Anonymous writes, are there any holistic treatments or remedies for and inguinal hernia, or is surgery the only answer?
Surgery.
Okay, surgery is the only answer. Okay.
Once that tissue has busted through the sac and is pushing out the intestine, the risk of getting an incarcerated piece or a trapped piece of intestine is too great to not just do surgery.
Gina writes this, I have chronic dry eye, and I've had it for years. Restasis is pricey, but it helps a bit. Now a doc has recommended surgery, and out-of-pocket is costly. Can you recommend anything?
Go ahead.
And she says, I now have to tape my eyes closed at night.
Oh, Gina, I'm so sorry. I use a 1-2-3 approach for dry eye. I've got probably an 85% success rate. Number one is fish oil. That fish oil needs to be IFAS certified, international fish oil standards. This is an independent testing laboratory that makes sure we don't have heavy metals or dioxins or PCBs or radioactivity in the fish oil. We don't want a Fukushima day glow fish in our fish oil. That fish oil, you want to take your body weight. You want to add a zero to your body weight, and you want to have a minimum of that amount of EPA and DHA. EPA and DHA are the two active ingredients in fish oil. So you don't say that 1,000 milligrams of omega-3s. It's got to be that amount of your body weight plus a zero of the EPA and DHA. We do that for 6 weeks. At the end of the 6 weeks, if the fish oil hasn't solved the dry eye problem, then we add borage oil. If at the end of the second 6 weeks that hasn't solved the problem, you need to get a test for vitamin A and supplement for vitamin A. The nature of those three things together, fish oil, borage oil, and vitamin A, solve the majority of the dry eye problems I see in my practice. The next surgery that is recommended is putting plugs in your tear ducts to try to keep your tear ducts from draining, to keep that aqueous layer on the eye. But the reason that the aqueous layer keeps evaporating away is it doesn't have a lipid layer on top of it to protect it. So we have to have that lipid layer, which is what faces the world, to protect the aqueous layer. And then underneath the aqueous layer, right next to the eyeball, is the mucin layer, which is fed by vitamin A. And beta-carotene is not vitamin A. Beta-carotene is supposed to become vitamin A. Beta-carotene is going to show up in carrots and sweet potatoes and peaches and papayas and apricots. But some people don't convert beta-carotene into vitamin A very well. So you need to get that tested. So that's my recommendation for dry eye.
And Eve Prang Plews is here. This is the Health and Nutrition Program. Just a reminder to our listeners that WMNF is a listener-supported radio station. We don't have commercials here. We get all of our money, or at least most of our money, from donations from listeners. And if you like all the programs here on WMNF, or you like maybe just a few programs, we hope you'll make a contribution. This week, on Thursday, our fund drive begins, and we're trying to raise $250,000 during the fund drive that begins on Thursday. So please go to our website now and make an early donation. Help us reach that goal. Our website is secure. It's WMNF.org. And here's somebody who says, great show as always, but Korean and American ginseng are different species within the same plant family.
Right, and I said that, Eleutherococcus and Panax.
Right.
They're two completely different species.
And then Brianna writes, is grass-fed organic beef considered as inflammatory as feedlot beef?
No, it isn't considered as inflammatory because it has more omega-3s and less omega-6s. Omega-6s are the pro-inflammatory agent. Omega-3s are the anti-inflammatory agent. So when cows eat what cows are supposed to eat, which is grass, then they make a whole lot more omega-3 in their tissue and much less omega-6. The omega-6 is driven by them eating genetically modified corn and genetically modified soybeans, genetically modified alfalfa. So there's no question that it's better. It's still got a high saturated fat ratio as well as the good omega-3s. I still do not recommend the use of four-legged animals more than twice a week because the planet cannot support that amount of meat eating.
Let's go to Susan, who's in Seminole. Hi, Susan. You're on with Eve. What's your question?
Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday, and happy birthday to your husband, Eve.
Thanks, Susan.
You are a wealth of knowledge. I don't know if my question can be answered with your knowledge, but I'll try. I had a fall in my house. I'm 60 years old. My rubber sneakers got caught, and I went down hard on my side of my head, had a CAT scan. The result is no cracks or anything, but a mild atrophy. And I was told that as we age, that's normal for your brain to start shrinking, which was unnerving. Is there any vitamins or food supplements? I'm a vegetarian of 35 years. I thought I was pretty healthy, but we can't stop shrinkage, I guess.
Well, first off, atrophy may be common, but it is not normal.
Okay.
So we have to understand the difference. We have to understand the difference between common and normal.
Okay.
We don't want the word atrophy to go in the same sentence as the word brain. So the first thing that we want to understand is that the brain is fundamentally made out of fat. But it's functional fat. It's not the fat we're sitting on. And so the brain needs those good nutrients from fats. And in a vegetarian diet, we're looking at almonds and avocados. We're looking at foods where those fats occur naturally. Do you embrace eggs at all?
Just recently, because my daughter says, Mom, you're losing too much weight and you need more protein. She's a trainer.
I would very highly endorse, for the reason I said earlier in the show, that eggs are one of the few sources of phosphatidylcholine in the American diet.
Right.
The others being organ meats. So I would recommend a considerable amount of eggs in the diet, at least a dozen egg yolks a week.
Whoa.
When that atrophy has taken place, and if you're willing to use fish oils, then the recommendation that I gave earlier, and if you're not willing to use fish oils, then you can use DHA oil, which comes from the same algae that the fishes eat in order to make the EPA and DHA that we find in fish oil. You'll only get one side of that equation, which is the DHA. You'll have to take a considerable number of capsules because they're only available in 200 milligram doses. But egg yolks and DHA and exercise, those are the three recommendations I'd make.
On an old show, you had said that cooking eggs in a scrambled form instead of hard-boiled is more nutritious.
I just said that the best way to have eggs is when the egg yolk still moves, like a poached egg or an over-easy egg or a soft-boiled egg.
Uh-huh.
But a soft-scrambled egg would be my next choice. It is more difficult for the body to digest a hard-boiled egg, so my recommendations are the softer eggs.
All right.
Can I ask one more question? Is it true that a CAT scan is equivalent to 200 chest x-rays?
I don't have that equation in my mind right now. That might be something that you just look up.
Okie doke.
All right.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you. A bunch of emails are still stacked up. Mike writes this: what sort of diet changes would eliminate problems like hemorrhoids? I realized recently that my diet is almost entirely consisted of hot spice and more beef than chicken or fish. Are these the causes of things like hemorrhoids?
Well, it's the lack of fiber that is fundamentally the cause of hemorrhoids. When, you know, there's no fiber in meat, period. And so it doesn't matter what meat it is. There's no fiber in dairy products. There's no fiber in eggs. So all of the animal foods contain no fiber. Where are we going to get the fiber? Whole grains, fruits and vegetables. So if we don't have adequate amounts of that, that's going to contribute to straining when we have a bowel movement. And straining will create a varicose vein of the anus, which is what a hemorrhoid is. So the first place I start is by increasing fiber in the diet. And if you're not going to do it through fruits and vegetables and whole grains, then you need to do it through a supplement.
Now, Eve, we just have 20 seconds left. Craig writes, what's Eve's opinion on black seed oil?
Well, you're just going to have to call back in 2 weeks and find out, because I could not possibly do a black seed oil announcement in 20 seconds.
Hey, happy birthday to Dennis Plews.
Okay, so I'll pass it on.
So, Eve, you'll be back for a special show next Monday at 10 o'clock. So I hope people tune in. And we'll have your regular show 2 weeks from today at 10 o'clock on a Monday.
I hope they tune in and they also have their checkbook out.
Well,
because they're getting really valuable advice on this show. And I'm not getting that $400 an hour that some of these doctors have given this advice. So remember WMNF.
All right, Eve, thanks a lot. Have a great week. See you next, or talk to you next Monday. This is WMNF in Tampa. Eve.